Today I'm going to talk about work with my advisor Hong Liu on using entanglement entropy to probe Archie flows. And it's based on these two papers and of course on work of others. So here's the outline of my talk. I will start with a rather long introduction where I summarize I think the most essential things we can learn from this approach. So it will be some kind of a summary without the technical details, and then I will, in these two sections, provide some more details, and finally I will conclude. So here's a lightning review of how we think about quantum field theory in the modern era. So we use the Wilsonian picture where we start from a microscopic description in the UV, and we want to learn how the system behaves at long distances. So if strong interactions are involved, this procedure is not straightforward, involves some guesswork, of course. There are constraints on what can emerge at long distances. We use symmetry arguments, various approximation schemes, or perturbation theory in the coupling constant, large N, epsilon expansion, etc. So the most familiar example is of a strongly interacting theory for particle physicists is QCD, where at short distances we have a weakly interacting theory of quarks and gluons, but at long distances a very different description emerges in terms of pions, and there the guesswork is replaced by the theory of chiral effective field theory, which builds on the spontaneous breaking of chiral symmetry. So it would be of great use if we had some non-perturbative information that constrains what kind of IR physics can emerge, and the most well-known is the constraint coming from symmetries. There's also anomaly matching by Toft and various other inequalities. And we will examine such an inequality in this talk, which is based on the intuition that because the Wilsonian RG involves averaging over short distance fluctuations, short distance degrees of freedom, intuitively, it leads to the decrease of number of degrees of freedom as we go to long distances. So this is a nice intuitive picture, and the question is whether we can formalize it even when interactions are strong. Okay? So I will, here in the introduction, I will restrict myself to the 3D story because that's where the most recent progress has happened and which uses entanglement entropy. So I'm sure that people here are familiar with entanglement entropy, so I will be very quick here, but if you have any questions, please stop me and then we can discuss in more detail. So we start from a local theory and divide flat space into two geometric regions, V and its complement, V bar, and in a local theory, the Hilbert space factorizes. I denote it by zero, the vacuum, and I can define the reduced density matrix by partially tracing over this complement region. And then if we have this reduced density matrix, then we can calculate its quantum entropy. So that's what we call entanglement entropy. And the terminology is that the boundary of this region V, I will denote it by sigma, and we talk about entanglement entropy across this surface sigma. So as you probably have heard, entanglement entropy in the continuum limit is divergent. So if the UV cutoff, it's a distance scale, small distance scale, I denoted by delta. So if this is the UV cutoff, then it obeys the area law. So this area here is just the length of this of the perimeter of V in three dimensions. And then, so we have this divergent piece, which is non-universal, and then we have a universal constant in three dimensions. And by universal, I mean here that no matter how you regularize your theory, you get the same constant. You get, if you change your cutoff, say just change it to twice the cutoff, then this first term changes, but the second term does not. And a famous result by Cassini, Huerta, and Rob is that for a CFT, and when V is a disk, this universal piece, F of V, is equal to the universal piece in the S3 partition function of the same CFT. So that's a Euclidean partition function. And this provides a hint why entanglement entropy can have anything to do with the degrees of freedom, because we think about free energies as if the free energy is big, there are many degrees of freedom. If it's small, then there are not too many. So this is, for me, a hint why entanglement entropy can have anything to do with the number of degrees of freedom. And in our work with Hong, we made the proposal that this function f of r, which you get by acting with this differential operator, which is just the logarithmic derivative with respect to r, which we will think of as the Rg scale. So r is the radius of the disk that we take here, minus 1. So this differential operator acting on the entanglement entropy of the disk gives us this function f of r. And as we will see, this is a good proxy for the number of degrees of freedom in the quantum theory. In particular, for a CFT, it gives back this universal piece, which then by this result equals the S3 partition function. So in order to be able to interpret this F of R as the number of degrees of freedom, it has to be positive and it has to decrease under Rg. So this was the proposal that we made, and it turns out that you can prove this, and I will discuss it in more details, but for now let's just accept that this is a theorem in quantum field theory. So it's it captures the intuition that we were striving for, that if we have a definition of the number of degrees of freedom in Rg, then that provides a constraint on the possible Rg flows. So here's a cartoon of Rg, so in coupling space. So I just took two couplings, made a two-dimensional slice of this infinite-dimensional space, and we have UV fixed points denoted by purple blobs and IR fixed points denoted by red blobs, and the Rg trajectories are these lines. And so I think a very good visualization of this this new understanding, this improved understanding, is to draw a landscape. And I'm stealing the picture from Rob. So this new function, this number of degrees of freedom, draws a landscape on this space of couplings. And the constraint is that that Rg flows descend on this landscape. They don't necessarily go in the steepest descent direction, but they are constrained to descend. So this is an improved understanding over this. And You can see that this landscape has cliffs and rifts, and we will see that if we use this entanglement entropy, then this height function will have some funny analytic properties. So that's why I chose this picture. Okay. So I again drew this chart. So now we have a constraint on what kind of IR physics can emerge. This is now known as the F theorem. So the constraint is that for the F value corresponding to this UV theory has to be greater than or equal to the F value of the RAT theory. So, and this is because this F function monotonically decreases, so the end between the endpoints it has to obey this inequality. So this is a fully non-perturbative constraint on RG flows, and as I said, this can prove valuable in extracting information about strongly interacting theories. So two examples where this can actually be used is confinement in 3D gauge theories and phase transitions. So let's take QED3, three-dimensional QED with some number of fermion flavors, and without analyzing the detailed dynamics, just by using this inequality, one can show that for NF greater than or equal to 12, the theory won't confine. So in the IR, it flows to some non-trivial interacting CFT. And if you analyze the dynamics in a bit more detail, which I've done with Ethan Dyer and Silvio Pufu, then you can actually conclude that this NF equals 12 is the boundary between confining behavior and deconfining behavior. So here actually this theorem gives the exact bound, F theorem gives the exact bound on the number of critical number of fermion flavors. I mean, that's hasn't had to be that way, but in this case it is this way. Another application is for statistical physics of phase transitions. So let's take a zero temperature system, which has a phase diagram that has an antiferromagnet on one side and the topological phase on the other side. And in between there's a zero temperature phase transition that is usually called quantum phase transition because it is at zero temperature. So this phase diagram is just one dimensional. We have some coupling that we can tune. If the coupling is, say, positive, then we float an antiferromagnet. If it's negative, to a topological phase. And based on symmetry, you would say maybe a conjecture that this quantum critical point is just the O3 model. But running this F theorem argument, you can conclude that it cannot be that theory. So this is another non-trivial application that is useful in condensed matter. Okay, so this concludes my introduction. Does anybody have any questions about this story? So if not, then I will flesh out some details of this story. Okay. So as we already discussed, entanglement entropy, so now I will keep the dimension arbitrary. So I just use three dimensions for illustrative purposes. So the famous area law behavior controls the leading divergence of entanglement entropy. It is divergent because there's a strong entanglement between degrees of freedom on the two sides of this entangling surface. Because there's an explicit cutoff dependence, and this is not a cutoff dependence of bare perturbation theory, say, this is even after you did your renormalization. So this quantity, entanglement entropy, is ill-defined in the continuum limit. It depends on degrees of freedom at all scales. So this doesn't seem to be very appropriate to use for the as a proxy for the number of degrees of freedom at a scale, because it depends on both short and long distance physics. So the common practice is just to subtract this UV divergent piece, and then we are left with a finite quantity. But even after subtraction, the dependence is on lots of degrees of freedom at many scales. So it can depend on, so if the characteristic size of this region, I think of that as my scale, and I will denote that by R. So after doing this subtraction, the entanglement entropy will depend on degrees of freedom at scales a lot smaller than this R. And this is illustrated by the following two examples. So let's just take a three-dimensional massive scalar. And under this cross, you can see the divergence piece that I subtract. And this is the large R expansion of the formula for a disk. So even though I subtracted this piece, I'm left with this linear in R piece. But at long distances, the theory is just an empty theory because there's this mass scale and we already went to longer distances than the Compton wavelength of this particle. So maybe it would be nice to get zero in the large R limit. Instead, we get minus infinity. On top of this all, if we redefine the cutoff in this way, then that would change the result. So maybe that's not too nice. Another example is a CFT to CFT flow, and this is just a cartoon of it, which I first encountered when I started to think about this problem. So I just did a holographic analysis and subtracted the UV divergent piece and got this graph. So as you can see, we start from a constant at the UV fixed point, but in the IR, we don't get a constant. We get, again, a linear in R piece. So this is a bit awkward, but you can fix this. So instead of this plot, we would like to see something like this. So if you do this simple procedure that you act with this differential operator on S, then in my holographic example that I first looked at, I instead of this, I got this plot. So that's an indication that things are going to work out. And indeed, if you define these, I mean, this is not a perfect name, renormalized entanglement entropies, by acting with differential operators on entanglement entropy, then you can, we will discuss that you get a finite UV finite quantity that has all the nice properties. So in two dimensions, it's just taking the logarithmic derivative with respect to R. In three dimensions, we already discussed it. There's a dependence on sigma, the shape of the entangling region. In two dimensions, the region is just an interval. So there we don't have shape dependence. And in higher dimensions, you just act with more derivatives. Okay, so why is this a good idea? I will go through this argument. Not every detail of it, but I think this may be enough to convince you that acting with these differential operators indeed extracts a finite piece from entanglement entropy. So this renormalized entanglement entropy has the following nice properties. So first, it is UV finite in the continuum limit. And it is UV finite for the following reason. So the divergence is coming from cutoff scale physics. It's coming from entanglement between degrees of freedom at the two sides of this entangling region. So the divergent piece should be possible to be written as an integral over this entangling surface of a local function of the extrinsic curvature and the induced metric on this entangling surface. And then one can use this property which is valid for pure states, that the entanglement entropy of V is equal to the entanglement entropy of V bar, that it's very easy to show that this is true for entanglement entropy in pure states. So if that's true, then one can restrict the form of this F functional, and what comes out is that the powers of R that can appear in this divergent piece have, so these powers are coming in steps of 2. So D minus 2, D minus 4, and so on. And if we are in a CFT, then the only other scale is the cutoff. So and entanglement entropy is a dimensionless quantity, so the cutoff has to make up for the dimensions that were introduced by this R, which is just, again, the characteristic size of this region. So in odd dimensions, we get this form. In even dimensions, we get this form. And the universal piece in odd dimensions is just a constant. In even dimensions, there's a log R over delta. And you can see that the constant is not universal, because if I change delta, that changes the constant. So there, the candidate universal quantity is the coefficient of this log piece. So this is for a CFT. How about a renormalizable flow? By renormalizable, I just mean that it starts with a continuum UV fixed point, and then I have a relevant deformation of it. So the mass scale is provided by this mu, and for small mu times delta naught, I can expand. So there's this A1 coefficient, and there's a similar expansion for A2 and A3. So the dimensions are given by this delta naught, which is just the CFT cutoff, and then there is a function of the dimensionless combination mu times delta naught, and one can expand this for small mu times delta naught, and it is expected to behave something like this, where delta is the dimension of the relevant operator that we perturbed our UV theory with. Okay, so if we accept these formulas, then just by acting with the differential operator, one can see that this renormalized entanglement entropy is finite. So if it's finite, then we can just go with delta naught to zero and have a well-defined quantity in the continuum limit. Other three important properties of this is that, as I alluded to, in three dimensions, if you look at what this REE is for a CFT, it just exactly extracts these universal pieces. It was designed to do that. So these combinations with these prefactors were designed to extract that quantity. Okay. One nice property that we wanted it to obey is that it interpolates. So if we have an RG flow which interpolates between a UV CFT and IR CFT, this renormalized entanglement entropy, which I denoted by curly S on the other slide, interpolates between the values of these pieces at the UV and IR fixed points. So instead of doing this, not going to a constant in the IR, one can argue that it actually goes to a constant in the IR. So that's very nice. And if, I mean, I think this is a fairly convincing argument that we presented. And if this is true, then it seems that this renormalized entanglement entropy is most sensitive to the degrees of freedom at scale R. So I'm not making a very strong statement here. It, as we will see, it still has some remnant of sensitivity to other scales, but it's most sensitive to the degrees of freedom at scale R. So then if it's measuring entanglement at a scale, then it might be a good idea to try to connect this to the number of degrees of freedom, and there are some very suggestive connections. So again, RG, Wilsonian RG leads to the loss of degrees of freedom. So here's an argument from Polchinski. So if we go, so imagine a weakly coupled field theory. So a field contributes to the count of the number of degrees of freedom if we are below the Compton wavelength of the particle, but at long distances, the only effect of these particles are in loops, and they just correct of the parameters of the theory, but don't contribute to the dynamics. So this is an intuitive explanation of why RG should lead to a loss of degrees of freedom. And in two dimensions, Zamolochnikov, almost 30 years ago, showed that you can indeed define such a monotonic quantity. So that formalized the intuition in 2D. And it's famously the C central charge. But the C central charge can be isolated from many different quantities. So in particular, it can be isolated from entanglement entropy. So if you remember how we define, so this is the result for a 2D CFT for one interval. And if you remember how we defined this renormalized entanglement entropy in two dimensions, it was just a logarithmic derivative with respect to R. So it exactly extracts this C. And you can actually, only using the strong subadditivity property of entanglement entropy, Cassini and Huerta proved or provided an alternative proof of the Zamolochnikov C theorem by just using entanglement entropy. So already in 2D, before our work, it was clear that you can use entanglement entropy as a proxy for the number of degrees of freedom. And then there was also the work of Myers and Sinha in holography, where they identified that the entanglement entropy of sphere or like ball-shaped regions or across spheres in holography always obeys the inequality CUV greater than or equal to CIR. Another connection is that in four dimensions, Solodukin showed that that this universal piece that I had on the other slide is exactly equal to the A central charge, which was conjectured long ago by Cardi and later proved by Komargotsky and Schwimmer to decrease under RG flow. Then there was also work by the Princeton group that the free energy, so the S3 free energy that we saw in the introduction equals to the disk entanglement entropy, also decreases in under RG flow in many examples. So these were all pointing towards a possibility that this renormalized entanglement entropy, which exactly equals to these quantities at CFT fixed points can provide a monotonic interpolating function between this CUV and CIR. So the question is that we faced is whether this REE, so it's clear that it interpolates between the two, but whether it's positive and monotonic was a question that that we needed to answer. And so without knowing the proof, what you do is you test this monotonicity. So you can, antagonal entropy is notoriously hard to calculate in field theories. So what you can do is basically free theories and holographic examples. So here we analyzed this renormalized entanglement entropy that is denoted by F on this plot in a massive free scalar theory. And there's also the same plot for a Dirac fermion by Savty. So you can see that it's monotonically decreasing. It goes to zero at large distances because we have an empty theory, and it starts exactly at the CFT value that can be calculated. And these, so the black line is what you have to look at. The orange line just gives the asymptotic expansion. It decays to zero as 1 over R, and the CFT value is this red dotted line. So this is just one example. This is the only field theory calculation I know how to do. But in holography, following the work of Ryu and Takanayagi, it's very easy to calculate entanglement entropy, at least in theories with an Einstein gravity dual. So we studied a variety of examples, and for closely separated fixed points that I will discuss soon, one can actually prove the monotonicity in OLT. The monotonicity won't be true in all dimensions if we allow for all RG flows. So here's an example of the Coulomb branch for n equals 4. So I calculated this renormalized entanglement entropy for that flow, and you can see that it's, so this is zero, so it's neither positive nor monotonic. So in 4 dimensions and in higher dimensions, this proposal fails. But in 3 dimensions, all examples showed monotonic behavior. And indeed, soon after our paper, Cassini and Huerta, similarly to their 2-dimensional proof, but using a very elaborate geometric construction, proved this theorem in 3 dimensions. So that's why we found in all examples that it was monotonic, because it is monotonic. So this provided a proof of the C theorem or the F theorem in 3 dimensions. Okay. So this concludes my discussion of the monotonicity of REE and C theorems. But it still remains to be seen if this is a useful quantity, we might be interested in how it behaves near fixed points. So this is the next topic I want to discuss. So the naive field theory expectation is that if we have a fixed point perturbed by some operator of dimension delta, then because at a CFT fixed point, the one-point functions vanish, the first contribution to entanglement entropy will come from two-point functions. So you would expect that for an RG flow near R equals to zero, so in the UV, you will get the CFT value plus some contribution that, based on dimensional analysis, comes to be of this form. So mu times R raised to the 2 coming from the two-point functions D minus delta. And similarly, if we perturb a CFT with an irrelevant operator, then we will flow up to a UV fixed point. But the leading contribution is expected to come from the leading irrelevant operator with some coefficient that coefficients that I denoted by A and B. Okay, so this would be my first guess, how it should behave near CFD fixed points. Okay, then if you think a little bit more, you see that the geometric expansion that I discussed before allows for terms near in the R goes to infinity limit that are power odd powers of 1 over R in odd dimensions and even powers of 1 over R in even dimensions. And if it's allowed, then it will probably be there. And in holographic computations, you can see that these terms are there. And but so these 1 over R type terms come with some coefficients, but because these are these you obtain from this geometric expansion, you expect that these coefficients won't just depend on physics near the fixed point. It should depend on the full RG flow, and indeed that's what we're going to find in so they should depend on all scales between the UV and the scale and this scale R, but because we go with R to infinity, it basically depends on the whole trajectory. So these are corrections to the IR picture, but they are not corrections to the UV picture. And indeed, so the only field theory computation, or it's a rather formal result, but the recent paper by Rosenhaus and Smolkin show that the where they evaluate the reduced density matrix perturbatively for sphere-like regions, they indeed see at least this kind of behavior without actually determining this constant. But I think if you work through their formulas, you would be able to determine that constant. But I think from the field theory computation, it is a challenge to reproduce these 1 over R pieces. At least I don't know how to do that. Okay, and I would like to point out some funny property of this function in coupling space. So it's easy to go from this renormalized entanglement entropy along a trajectory to a function over coupling space just by using the coupling, the values of the running couplings at that scale. So if you do that, you basically translate mu to the d minus delta into an effective coupling constant g, and so you see that you get a nice g squared behavior near a UV fixed point, also a nice g squared behavior near the IR fixed point from these terms. But these terms were non-analytic in R, but they give nice analytic pieces in G. But these nice analytic pieces in R give horrible non-analytic pieces in G. So depending on what the demand, this is again only at the IR fixed point from my argument. So depending on this dimension delta tilde, which is the leading irrelevant operator, this function on coupling space can either be stationary or non-stationary, depending on how irrelevant the operator is. If this delta tilde is very close to D, so it's just slightly irrelevant, then there's a big small number in the denominator, and so you get the big power of G, so then you're safe, and the function is stationary. But if it's very irrelevant, the leading irrelevant operator is very irrelevant, then you will see some funny non-analyticity. Okay, so this is the nice expectation, and then comes the surprise from free theories in 2 and 3 dimensions. They defy this expectation the free scalar and Dirac fermion in 2D give these expressions. And I don't know how to obtain them in that frame or from those arguments that I discussed in the previous slide. In three dimensions, the expressions, small MR expressions, are not known. But here's, I repeat, the plot for the scalar. G in the previous slide is equal to m squared. So from the previous argument near the UV fixed point, we should see an m to the 4 r to the 4 behavior. And this function is definitely not a quartic function near 0. So these are puzzling features of free theories that currently I think nobody knows how to resolve. So this was pointed out by Klebanov, Nishioka, Puffu, and Savdi that near this UV fixed point, this function in coupling space won't be stationary. One more thing that I haven't discussed is what happens in a gap theory. In d equals to 2, this REE decays exponentially. In d greater than 2, one gets this 1 over r squared pieces. It just for completeness. So if we have a CFT to empty theory flow, then you get these behaviors. And let me briefly just show you how one can do an easy holographic calculation to reproduce all these behaviors. So the holographic dictionary translates a CFT to CFT flow to an ADS to ADS domain wall. So here's the line element. We want to preserve Poincaré invariance in the field theory direction. So I've used spherical harmonics. No, the coordinates in the space-like directions of the field theory, and there's just the time, and then z is the holographic direction, z equals 0 is the boundary, z goes to infinity is the d pi r. And so then if you use these coordinates, then you have one function freedom to encode this RG flow. So you will get a domain wall that starts at 1 and then ends up at values L squared over LIR squared, where L is the ADS radius. So LIR is the IR ADS radius. So this is indeed a domain wall from ADS to ADS. And if you take this value to be close to 1, then you can expand this F in this small number epsilon. So if you choose to do that, then you will have a perturbative scheme, and it will provide you with very explicit results. So let's do that. So F is 1 plus a small function, and this G has to be positive from the null energy condition. Okay, so the Ryu-Takanayagi formula just tells you to calculate the minimal surface in this geometry. We know the minimal surface in ADS is just a hemisphere. So this is the Ryu-Takanayagi formula. Just calculate the minimal area surface that ends on the entangling surface on the boundary. And if you plug in this expansion and use that to leading order in epsilon, the minimal surface doesn't change, you get this formula. So you can see that this is the UV piece, and then you get epsilon times the integral from 0 to r, where r is just the radius of the sphere. So this is, again, in three dimensions. It can be done in any dimensions. Just to keep the formula simple, I use three dimensions. So it's just the integral of this g of z. So it's a very explicit expression. And we will analyze this formula. It's trivial to see that if this f of z satisfies the null energy condition, which is usually assumed in holography, then this g of z has to be positive, and then the integral of it has to be positive. And because it comes with a minus sign, it's clear that that this S3, which is this renormalized entanglement entropy, has to decrease under RG flow. So we trivially establish that, and it's true in higher. So you get similar expressions in higher dimensions, so you can easily establish it. But of course, you are limited to this framework where the IR is not very different from the UV. Okay, by expanding g of z for small z, so near the boundary, you can obtain the small r behavior, and you get exactly, so I define now alpha to be d minus delta, but because we are in three dimensions, it's 3 minus delta, so you get exactly what you expected from the field theory argument, and you also get this coefficient that I think is a challenge, or like it would be nice to reproduce it from field theory computations. If you go into the IR, then you will get this piece that is coming just from the two-point function contribution, and you also get this 1 over R piece. You can determine its coefficient, this S1, what denoted by S1, and the expression is here. You see it involves an integral over all values of z, so as I argued for it in the previous slide, this depends on the full RG trajectory. It's not just determined by physics near the IR fixed point. Okay, so this is a very nice result. And apart from the expression of S1, which in a general holographic RG flow takes this form, so it's again an integral over z, but you have a more complicated expression. Of course, if you expand it in small epsilon, you get back to the previous expression, but this is the full expression. It's a highly non-trivial exercise to obtain this from a holographic computation. The methods are very different to what I showed you there, and let me just spend 2 minutes on explaining how you can obtain such a result. So the Ryu Takanayagi prescription tells you that you need to determine the minimal surface and then calculate its area. So to obtain the minimal surface, you need to do two series expansions and then match them together. So again, we are interested in the large R limit. So in the large R limit, the minimal surface will reach down to the deep IR. It will start out almost straight for a long time. So the domain wall transition happens somewhere here. We are way below that energy scale. But it won't go on straight forever in the IR, it caps off. So what you can do is you can do an expansion in large R, so in powers of 1 over R in the UV. So the leading piece is just a straight surface going down, and then you get 1 over R corrections, and you can solve these equations order by order. But this series expansion breaks down somewhere deep in the bulk. In the IR you expect to get a hemisphere because you are basically in ADS. But you are not quite in ADS, so you can expand this f of z function, which determines the shape of the domain wall around for large z values. And then you can again use a perturbative scheme to determine corrections to this hemisphere behavior. These corrections will, so this series expansion will also break down as you go to the UV, but fortunately there's a matching region in between where you can where both expansions are still valid and you can match together these expressions. And if you work your way through it, then you can obtain such nice expressions. But so this is the only ugly expression. The other expressions are just identical to what you obtain from these closely separated fixed points. And the reason for that is that these terms just depend on physics near the fixed point. So it doesn't matter what you have in between. It doesn't matter whether the RG flow is between very different fixed points or very similar fixed points. It's just not sensitive to that. So you expect that if you somehow manage to obtain an expression for a formula for these terms in any approach, then they will be exact, and they are indeed exact. Okay, so this is how much detail I wanted to give you, and let me just conclude briefly. So I argued that entanglement entropy is a sensitive probe of RG in 2 and 3 space-time dimensions. It provides a height function over coupling space and gives you non-perturbative information of what kind of IR behavior you can get. The stationarity of this height function is a subtle question, and I depicted how a stationary function over coupling space, so the purple is a UV fixed point, the red is an IR fixed point, and you can have this nice stationary behavior, but you can also have this cuspy behavior around fixed points. So IR cusps are even produced by holography, but UV cusps so far are only known to be produced by free field theories. And I think it's fair to say that the field theory understanding is still in its infancy. We don't understand why do free massive scalars give you non-stationary renormalized entanglement entropy, how to reproduce the 1 over R piece near IR fixed points from field theory computation is also a challenge. And finally, I think it would be nice to provide some continuum definition of of this renormalized entanglement entropy. So we define it through entanglement entropy, going through this divergent quantity, then taking derivatives, then taking the continuum limit. It would be nice to have an intrinsic definition where you don't have to go through all this procedure. So thank you for your attention. I mean, so I think the problem of analytic continuation of this replica index in as many of the works of Rob pointed out is that so you can do this in 2 dimensions where you basically don't have extrinsic curvature of this minimal surface, but somehow analytically continuing these geometries is not very easy because you don't know how to go. So near the surface you can analytically continue in the number of replicas, but away from it somehow you don't know what is the right analytic continuation. So I think that is the main obstacle for
the dimensions. How different is the normalized entanglement from the Chukwin function?
It is very different. For example, if you look, so if you look at this behavior, this is not, so the Zamolodchnikov C function or anything that you can get from the Friedan type C function, which is defined through the spectral density of coming from the stress tensor, doesn't behave this in this singular manner. So I don't know. I think nobody related the two yet. I think it's an interesting question to relate the two. Yeah, it's definitely not the same.
Let's thank Mark again. Okay.